Next item on the agenda is item five, Virginia Natural Gas, docket number 07-1036. Morning, Elizabeth.
Oh, I just didn't press hard enough. All right. Virginia Natural Gas is requesting authorization to install by the directional drill method 80 linear feet of natural gas pipeline beneath New Market Creek in Hampton and 1,064 linear feet beneath Salters Creek in Newport News, and install by the directional drill and trenching methods 21,500 linear feet of pipeline beneath Hampton Roads in Newport News and Portsmouth, with five tie-ins resulting in displacement of 277,400 cubic yards of sediment. At the February 26, 2008 commission meeting, V&G asked that the commission consideration of their request be deferred to the March meeting in order for them to have time to consider further modifying their proposal in response to concerns raised by staff and VIMS. Since then, staff has met with V&G on two occasions to discuss their proposed changes and received a letter and plan view drawing dated March 11, 2008, outlining their proposed modifications. Another revised drawing was sent to staff by email on March 19th with a note that final drawings would not be completed for at least another 2 weeks. Briefly, an aerial view showing Hampton Roads Harbor and then middle ground light with the line coming across to Craney Island. And this is the project drawing. You can see the stitch points in red. The directional drill line is highlighted in green, and then the trench section would be this part right here. At this point, V&G is asking to directionally drill the majority of the line across Hampton Roads Harbor, with one segment being trenched by mechanical dredge methods. That will require displacement of 29,400 cubic yards of sediment. By the stitch points, there are five total, including the two at the either end of the trenched section. They are necessary to connect the individual pipeline segments, and the trenching will result in displacement of an additional 248,000 cubic yards of sediment. Material from the trench segment and the stitch areas is proposed to be sidecast and subsequently recovered for use in filling in the trenches and covering the stitch points once the pipeline has been laid. Since the previous proposal proposed to trench the entire segment next to Middle Ground Sanctuary by using a hydraulic jet sled, this latest revision represents a marked improvement over the original plan. In spite of these changes, the current proposal still has the potential to cause significant environmental impacts to the aquatic environment and fishery resources that we believe can be further minimized. A major question and point of concern is the fate of the material that V&G proposes to sidecast next to the trenched areas. Thus far, V&G has not been able to provide us with specific information regarding the amount, location, and square footage of sidecast areas to be impacted, information on or an analysis of local currents to determine what percentage of sidecast material may be transported and to forecast where it may be transported, a detailed work schedule specifying how long the sidecast material will be in the water and subject to currents, the sources of any backfill material that will be required to fill the trenches should the sidecast material be lost, and an agreement to conduct comprehensive bathymetric surveys of the area before, during, and after pipeline installation. In the absence of this information, it is difficult for staff and our advisors at VIMS to quantify the exact extent of impacts that might result from the project. These concerns are shared by VIMS based on their review of the current plan. In addition, V&G's March 11th letter noted that the mechanically dredged trench area might be extended further shoreward in this area. Staff is particularly concerned that this proposed extension of trenched line would extend into an area with metal-contaminated sediments. Sediment cores were taken along the length of the proposed line, and this is the proposal from their original application. It's changed a bit based on the revised drawing. But core B1A, which is up here at the top, had levels of arsenic and nickel that would be of concern should the material be resuspended in the water column. Based on the latest information we have, the trench line extension could include the area where this core was taken. Again, no detailed drawings have been provided to show this possible extension. While this proposal is an improvement over the original, staff is still concerned about impacts from any mechanically dredged areas and would prefer that horizontal directionally drilling be used along the entire line, with all dredged material removed to an upland site for disposal. Sidecasting the material dredged from the trenches could possibly more than double the impacts to shellfish and benthic resources. In addition, the potential loss of sidecast material due to movement by currents is also of concern, since V&G estimates that it may be in the water as long as 6 to 8 weeks from initial dredging until the pipeline segments are recovered. V&G has not proposed a plan detailing their response action should the material no longer remain next to the trenches after the pipe has been laid. We also cannot rule out that additional dredging may be necessary should the sidecast material re-enter the trenches before the pipeline has been installed. Go back to the last drawing. In light of the foregoing and considering all of the factors contained in 28.2-1205A of the Code of Virginia, staff still recommends that the Commission require V&G to install the natural gas pipeline in Hampton Roads Harbor by the directional drill method, with stitch points being hydraulically dredged and the resulting dredged material removed from the system to an approved upland site. Should the Commission allow the stitch points to be excavated by mechanical methods, staff would recommend that clean fill or cover material be brought in rather than side casting the dredged material on the adjacent bottom. Furthermore, staff would recommend that V&G be required to mitigate for all clam impacts in an amount to be determined by our Fisheries Management Division at a rate of 1.33 to 1. This mitigation rate would be for any dredge and side cast areas impacted, as well as any anticipated impacts due to migration or dispersal of material with the currents. Staff also recommends that a time of year restriction from February through September be imposed for any in-water dredge or backfill activities to protect shellfish and anadromous fish species. Finally, staff recommends the Commission assess a royalty in the amount of $3 per linear foot for the encroachment meets state-owned subaqueous bottom. Should the Commission authorize dredging by any method, staff recommends a royalty in the amount of 45 cents per cubic yard. Final royalty amounts will be determined once staff receives final project drawings. As a reminder, this crossing is associated with two permanent easements that were passed by the 2007 General Assembly and signed by Governor Kane. Chapter 50X, 2007, authorized permanent easements and rights of way across and in beds of the Hampton Roads Harbor and Elizabeth River Reach, including a portion of the Baylor Survey, to V&G for the installation of the pipeline. VMRC was given the authority to grant and convey these easements and rights of way in a form and in accordance with an instrument approved by the Attorney General and Governor. The VMRC permit for the Elizabeth River Crossing was approved at the December 18, 2007 Commission meeting and was executed on January 8, 2008. To date, neither staff nor the Attorney General's office have received proposed easement documents for V&G for either the Elizabeth River Crossing or the Hampton Roads Crossing. We have provided V&G with an example of the language to be used in an easement. Once the Attorney General's office has approved the basic easement documents, normal procedure is for Assistant Attorney General Josephson to prepare a resolution for the Commission to approve the easements. The easements are then sent back to the Attorney General for final approval and on to the Governor for signature. Since the 2007 legislation references two easements, A and B, it would seem appropriate for V&G to prepare two separate easements for approval. Consistent with prior approvals of this kind, staff will be recommending fees in the amount of $29,506.16 for the easement over public ground number one in Hampton Roads, and $195,931.14 for the easement over public ground number three in the Elizabeth River. While the above-referenced easements were authorized by the legislature, Section 28.2-1208 of the Code of Virginia empowers the Commission, with the approval of the Attorney General and Governor, to also grant easements in the waters of the Commonwealth outside of Baylor grounds. Although V&G has not yet submitted any formal request for such an easement, they have indicated they may make such a request for approval. Processing an easement request pursuant to that code section would likely involve a review process similar to that undertaken for the permit. If the Commission were to approve that easement, the same legal process described above would be followed. The only difference is that the code sets the cost for this type of easement to a natural gas company at $100 for a 40-year easement. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from members of the commission? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several. One is that you've recommended a time of year restriction, even if the applicant complies with the proposed methodology. That is the recommended methodology of directional drilling coupled with hydraulic dredging of the stitch points. What is the rationale for those time of year restrictions?
I believe that is based on should the commission allow side casting of the material at the stitch point.
Okay, so if
Mr. Grab.
Correct. As a point of clarification, if they were to be directly drilled, the stitch points were to be hydraulically drilled, dredged, and clean backfill material brought in 85% sand, we would say the time of year restrictions from a staff level are not required.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. And the arsenic concern or the contaminant concern that you raised in your analysis, can you scale that for us or put it into some sort of context? How many samples were taken here?
I would have to go back and look through this before I could answer that.
Okay, but it was one sample tested positive for some sort of contaminant, right?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. And as far as, can you give us a sense of the different levels of risk aversion associated with the different dredging technologies, that is, directional drilling? It appears that directional drilling is the lowest risk method, but beyond that, the hydraulic dredging, would not hydraulic dredging also be mitigative?
And if we can, not to interrupt Mr. Robbins, but we will hear from VIMS, so if you feel more comfortable with them commenting on that, you may defer to them as well. It's up to you.
I'll go ahead and defer to them.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Mr. Tankard?
In the issues, you mentioned the potential loss of sidecast material due to the movement by currents. Mm-hmm. Is a concern. Can you quantify that a little bit? What kind of currents are really out there? And
that's also one of our questions. We're not sure.
Not sure at all.
Right.
Further questions? Mr. Schick?
Yeah, the currents wouldn't be a question if the material was removed from the site.
Right.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you. Who from the Virginia Institute of Marine Science would like to comment on this project? Morning, Dave.
Good morning, Commissioner Bowman, members of the commission. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have this morning. I want you also to know that Julie Bradshaw of the Wetlands Program has worked with VNG on this project over many months, through many meetings and conference calls, along with Lyle Varnell and Roger Mann. So if I'm unable to answer your questions, certainly one of us should be able to.
And we appreciate you putting your services to our avail. Dr. McConaughey.
Well, in terms of the currents, obviously there's tidal currents through there. It's probably going to be some of the stronger currents. Are there any other currents that you guys have identified? I mean,
Dr. McConaughey, the currents in the area of the core that was shown to contain the toxic arsenic and nickel material have been estimated anywhere between 10 and 40 centimeters per second at the bed. So that's a significant current that would be able to carry even sand-sized particulate matter.
Further questions? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you could follow up perhaps on the question I was asking staff, that is, can you give us some sense of the different dredging methodologies that are before us, that is, either directional drilling, hydraulic dredging, mechanical excavation, and how those might, or how we might view those as they relate to the risk of managing these contaminants that may be at one of the sites?
Mr. Robbins, I think the fact that this application is before you this morning is indicative of the proposed methodology versus hydraulic drilling or directionally drilling material, the line. I think we feel at VIMS if the proposal was for directionally drilling and hydraulically dredging the stitch points that this would likely be a page 2 item. Be that VNG has proposed to trench and sidecast the materials where the concerns on behalf of the resources of the Commonwealth come into question. So As far as quantifying the or conducting a risk assessment, it's difficult to quantify. All I can tell you is that our concerns are with the sediment moving due to the currents in that area around and affecting the clam resources and anadromous fish.
But if certainly if the spoils were removed, that would, I assume, lower the risk of these contaminants being a factor.
Absolutely. I guess what you're looking for is a kind of a way to break it down. And hydraulically, the directional drill method with hydraulically dredging the stitch points would be our preferred alternative. And then I guess a methodology which would be less preferred environmentally would be to side cast the material and leave it open to the currents for however long the material is going to lay on the bottom. That's when we have to start to consider what type of mitigative measures might be appropriate.
Thank you.
Further questions? Dr. McConaughey, then Mr. Schick.
Yeah, we've heard a lot where the red arrow there is there's contamination. Are any of those other cores contaminated?
To my knowledge, Dr. Okay. McConaughey. Those cores were taken by the applicant, and so that information's been provided by them to us for review.
Mr. Schick?
So if the trench was mechanically dredged and the material instead of side cast was removed, we've already heard that the time or year restriction would be eliminated, but how about your concerns as far as the clam beds and the fisheries in general if the material is removed and new material?
Right, new clean material placed in those holes. The material that would go back into the trench would be predominantly sand, which would settle out of solution relatively quickly into the trench, would be our assumption, and we would not require a time of year restriction for that operation. So if it was hydraulically dredged, clean fill material was brought back in, we would not recommend a time of year restriction for that activity.
And no mitigation requirements for any damage done?
That would be, I think, something that would be decided by the fisheries division, but we would foresee no need for mitigation.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have
Mr. Fox.
I have a question either of Ms. Gallup or Mr. Grab.
Proceed.
I'm wondering whether on the application there was any stated whether the purpose, the public benefits of the proposed project were stated. We know it's a gas pipeline, but what are the public benefits from that gas pipeline? We seem to be addressing the risk. Are those benefits on the application? Or are we going to have to wait?
Probably something that the applicant should address, and it goes back to the State Corporation Commission hearing and the requirement to, provide gas service to the south side and some of the benefits associated with the line. So I think the applicants.
They can do that, but I would be remiss in my position if I didn't tell you that it's part of Governor Kane's energy plan.
Oh, okay.
All right. I think the benefits are without question as to the distribution of the gas.
All right, we're required to consider the benefits.
Correct.
In our analysis.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. Mr. Daniel, will you be providing information on behalf of Virginia Natural Gas along with others?
I'm going to give it a try.
Good morning, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, John Daniel with Troutman Sanders on behalf of Virginia Natural Gas this morning. I'm going to need that easel because I've got some boards. Is there a place you'd rather? It's always a little awkward as to where to put this thing.
We could put it wherever it's easiest for you to work with.
Well,
and we'll,
I think right here would
be fine.
Would that work for you all? Yeah, thank you, Tony. Appreciate it very much. I am sorry to those in the audience. While we're waiting for that, I just want to say to your chairman, I appreciate your commitment to the task here. I know you are more than just a little bit under the weather. So we wish you well
in
recovery, and we'll try not to prolong this for you any longer than might be necessary. Again, John Daniel for Virginia Natural Gas. I have a number of folks with me today. There are three in particular who I will ask you to hear from as we go along. The first is Les Flora, who's with Virginia Natural Gas and who is the project manager for this. The second individual is Bruce Atkinhead, who you all are all familiar with, who's with Malcolm Perney and our fishery biologist. And the third is Rick Palmer with Weeks Marine, who can speak to the particular techniques for both laying of the pipe and, frankly, some risk associated with trying to lay pipe in the northernmost section of the route. As you recall, last month I came to you and I asked you if we could defer this matter until this meeting, and you kindly agreed to do that, and I appreciate that. The purpose of that request was so that we could continue to have discussions with VIMS and VMRC, both of which, I want to say at the onset, have helped this project meet the requirements and considerations that this commission must deliberate about in the issuance of any permit, not just this permit. And from my perspective, it's pretty clear that we have reached consensus and agreement on the great majority of the issues associated with a significant project of this nature. There are, of course, and the questions have been quite pointed and to the point with respect to those issues. There are issues remaining with respect to a 5,300-foot section in the northern end of this pipeline, which we propose to mechanically dredge, and there are remaining issues with respect to time of year restrictions with regard to when this project can actually be constructed. But before we talk about those, I want to give you a brief history because it's important and it goes directly to the comments of Mr. Fox just a moment ago. In August of 2006, the State Corporation Commission directed Virginia Natural Gas to construct the Hampton Roads Crossing Pipeline. The purpose of that pipeline was to increase the reliability of gas service to a rapidly growing region. And I would say to you the particular response to the public benefit is that that service is needed by an approximately 250,000 Virginians. So when you talk about public benefits and detriments, we're talking about reliable energy service for 250,000 to 280,000 Virginians who the State Corporation Commission has determined need additional energy. As you may know, for some time, at the direction of the governor, Virginia's been assembling a state energy plan. That plan was commissioned to be the state's blueprint for responding to energy needs for all Virginians. And in short, the goal was to position the Commonwealth to maximize our ability to be responsive to a volatile and to an unpredictable circumstance with regard to our energy supplies. If you've not looked at the plan, it is broad and it is specific at the same time. And it looks at renewable energy resources, it looks at traditional reserves and traditional resources, it looks at new reserves. And it looks additionally at the expanded opportunity for reliability and predictability with respect to supplying energy to Virginians. This Hampton Roads Crossing pipeline is specific to that plan. It is mentioned by name. And consequently a necessary component, at least in the eyes of those who work to develop our state's energy plan, to be a necessity. I mention that really to highlight the significance of the issues. It goes well beyond those in this room. It reaches a number of Virginians, and it literally impacts thousands of Virginians as we move forward in a very unpredictable world with respect to energy needs. Throughout our discussions with the staff and with VIMS, and I'll use those terms interchangeably because the great bulk of our discussions and sessions and meetings and so forth have involved folks who were willing to give a lot of time to this, and they were collective meetings both with VIMS and with your staff. But throughout all of this, Virginia Natural Gas has been guided by two things. First, their commitments to be good stewards of the environment. And I think if you looked at their corporate history and if you looked at their parent company, AGL, you will see that they have a history of trying to be good stewards as they go about a host of energy projects, not only in Virginia, but throughout the country. But that also has to be balanced by their fiduciary responsibility with respect to ratepayers. It is not indifferent than the responsibilities that this commission has, as Mr. Fox noted, to balance public needs and benefits and burdens under 28.2-1205 and your consideration of public trust public trust issues. This is not just a water crossing. This pipeline stretches some 17 miles, seven of which are in land areas and that have their own distinct and unique set of environmental challenges and opportunities. While it hadn't been the most convenient or the shortest or the cheapest, 90% of the land crossing of this pipeline utilizes existing municipal or utility rights of way. And what that does from a stewardship perspective is to avoid green space, it avoids open space, it avoids residential properties, it avoids parks, it avoids commercial properties, and those areas which are already subject to protection and or people needs. Environmentally sensitive construction techniques have been used throughout. And a variety of experts have been employed to study sensitive areas, wetlands, and other properties of ecological significance with the specific direction that they were to be avoided during the construction of this project. This is it's a bit of an interesting case in that we're here having a full public hearing, but we're in a complete absence of protestants. We've had public notice. We've had communication to adjacent landowners, as the process requires. And the reason I think that there are no protestants is not because it's too complicated, because we all know we've been here on matters much more complicated than this, and there have been protestants who filled the room. I think in part it's the outreach efforts of BNG staff, frankly, that have brought an understanding of the need and the stewardship of this responsibility to a host of organizations. As an example, they have met with Sierra Club representatives, Leagues of Conservation Organization leadership, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, the Maritime Association, the Virginia Pilots Association, the Watermen's Associations. All of those organizations have been brought into this project at an early stage, and yet we have not a single letter of protest, nor to my knowledge, unless somebody snuck in behind me as I've been up here, anybody in this room who's here to oppose this project. So what we really have is a circumstance where we're trying to find common ground between a number of scientists who have perhaps different perspectives on how this project ought to go forward. Your staff and Elizabeth in her report rightfully asked for additional information regarding cross-sectional drawings and detailed plan view drawings of the proposed trench and information regarding amounts, location, and square footage of sidecast areas. And while, as I've indicated, we've had lots of discussions, they've ongoing, I do have for you this morning that information that the staff had indicated they would like to see. I've got, I think, more than enough here. Oh, here's Steve's. Got to get well covered. Some of that will be easily, some of it I think you've seen before, frankly, in packages that we had provided in the last week or so. The specific information that I referenced is that which the staff has said they didn't have. And while we're apologetic for that, we had really working up to the 11th hour to find the compromise. And once we came to the point where we were, we thought it best to provide that as best we could, and they can look at it, and if there are questions, folks certainly are here who can answer that. I do want to spend just a few minutes, if I could, pictorially anyway, on where we've been with this project and the compromises and discussions that, frankly, as I've indicated, have helped the project along. This board was the original proposal. It's the one that, frankly, is noted on the agenda item in which Elizabeth had corrected during her staff presentation. As you can see, one of the major issues all along has been the issue of directional drill versus some other technique. And the primary concern with the project, as best I can determine from discussions with staff and others, has been the sanctity and the need to protect that middle ground area and the clam sanctuary and your broodstock area. The original proposal did not directionally drill, as you can see, through that middle ground area. Rather, it was a technique called jet sledding, and we've met lots of interesting people along the way as we've been talking about this project. Vims had a former employee of the staff of this commission and former Vims individual who had some experience with jet sledding technique in New York, and we brought to the conversations. He and Vims, after discussions, were not enamored with jet sledding in this part of the world. The result of that was obviously some additional discussions with the staff, and during those discussions, the real takeaway, if you will, from the staff and others was that, look, we're telling you we have the most environmentally sensitive area in this entire crossing is the middle ground area. Why don't you directionally drill the middle ground area? We don't care if you'll note in this on this board at the very northern end in Newport News and the southern end when you come up on Craney Island, that was proposed for directional drill, even from the onset. The comment was made, why don't you consider swapping out, if it's a cost issue, swapping out the directional drill in the north and the south, you know, inducing directional drill in that most environmentally sensitive area. In other words, use the technique that's most responsive to the environment in that area that most calls for it. So we heard that loud and clear. That board on that concept was scrapped in an effort to try to be responsive to the concerns about the middle ground area. The applicant went back to the drawing board and came up with this proposal. This proposal is an interesting one in that you see it zigs and zags, but the point was to move it to the west of the middle ground area. And in doing that, two things were accomplished. One, we thought we were being responsive to the concerns of staff with respect to the most environmentally sensitive area. And secondly, we were able to deal with issues, and we were further out of the anchorage area utilized by those that need anchorage in that area. This obviously is a fairly significant anchorage. By moving over here and closer to Monitor to Merrimack, vessels generally don't anchor in that area, so it really was two birds with one stone, if you will, and was responsive to two issues that we'd heard in discussions on the stewardship environmental front, as well as those with the folks at the Corps and the Pilots Association. So that seemed to be an improvement. There was some recognition that that might, in fact, work. But then, because of the awkward nature of the zig and the zag and so forth, the Virginia Natural Gas folks continue to poke and prod on the project, and they then came forward with what they thought was an even better concept from the Anchorage as well as from the environmental perspective. And this is the project as it sits before you today for your consideration. You'll see at first blush we've gone from 42% directional drill to 75% directional drill. There's only approximately 25% of the directional drill of the non-directional drill section, which is this blue or the black line here. The rest of this is directionally drilled. You can see it is directionally drilled beneath the middle ground. We have performed and done what we were requested, I think, to do, and throughout the process, which was to be appropriate with regard to the middle ground area and the broodstock area, and to use the most environmentally sensitive drilling technique in the area that, frankly, was the most environmentally sensitive throughout the course of the pipeline. So we are now directionally drilling 75%, that one stretch from the northernmost two red dots, which are stitch points, is about 5,300 feet. And we come to you asking for you to give due consideration to that proposal. The stitch points, obviously, you can't pull 10 miles of pipe. So the more directional drill you use, the more stitch points you're going to have, because you can't get but to a certain number of feet as you try to pull this pipe. So the stitch points have increased. So we look at the VIMS report, and we look at the staff report, and an issue which heretofore had frankly not been an issue in any of our discussions was we need to hydraulically dredge the stitch points. We had always contemplated that the stitch points would be mechanically dredged. They would be side cast, and they would then the trenches would be filled at the conclusion of laying the pipe. Now, I want to be fair about this, but I said a moment ago that really where we were was a discussion between scientists. We're not here with protesters clamoring behind me and in front of you and others. We're here because there's frankly differences of opinion with respect to the science and what happens with sediment and what might happen with benthics or clams or what may happen in certain circumstances given the proposal we want to utilize. But what I want to point out to you is that if you look at the reports, I mean, we talk about, we're generally going to degrade water quality. We are going to more than double, and loss of shellfish, and we have this potential to do this, that, or the other. Now, let me give you a specific example of that, and you've raised questions about it. Anyway, and there's really, frankly, no reason that our friends at your staff and at VIMS might have knowledge of this, except that they have had quite a lot of involvement with the project. We talk a lot about the potential for B1A. B1A is the core sample that was represented to you as having arsenic and nickel. First and foremost, the northernmost point that the mechanical dredge is proposed is over 500 feet south of B1A. Now, let me tell you a little bit, since you asked about it, about B1A. B1A does, in fact, have arsenic and nickel in that core sample. It's the lone core sample that showed any kind of toxics, to my knowledge, and somebody can correct that if I'm wrong. The way you measure arsenic and nickel is with something called the effects range median, or ERM. This is the action level scale, which the DEQ would utilize to tell you whether or not arsenic and nickel would have a problem. For arsenic, the ERM is 70 parts per million. In B1A, it's 10 parts per million. For nickel, the ERM is 51.6 parts per million, and B1A is 18 parts per million. And none of that really matters because we are, as I've indicated, more than 500 feet south of where B1A resides. So we've avoided B1A, again, because we knew that would be problematic, and we brought the directional drill in beyond it before we picked up with mechanical. Now, generally, and perhaps more than doubles and potential are not exactly what I would call precise science. But it is understandable that the same level of knowledge with respect to this project, the same basis, and the same understanding of core samples, of tidal currents, and of those things which have been raised here this morning in your questions, it's understandable that the experts from the applicant have a greater knowledge. They've studied it now for 2.5 years. They understand this pipeline. They understand the sediment. They understand what's going on in there with respect to benthic and others. And they are here and can talk to you about those items to satisfy any questions and concerns that you have. That is not in any way, and I hope everybody understands it, in any way to diminish the fine work that BIMS and do. As you know, we work together a lot, and I have had the privilege of working with BIMS and folks on your staff for more years, frankly, than I need to remind myself. And it's always been the same healthy, collaborative effort to try to get to an agreeable point. And I think that really is what we've come to here today. It simply points out that scientists can have different views, different perspectives based on levels of knowledge with respect to particularities. With regard to the water quality degradation, I mean, we really believe, I know what we, what do I know, the scientists believe that that sediment material is going to stay in place. Now, why do they think that? They think that because if you look at the core sampling that was done, and I don't think this is in your package, but I can show it to you. These are the numbers of core samples that were taken throughout the pipeline. Starts in Newport News, it moves to Craney Island. The blue on this is sandy material. Sandy material, the heavier material, the more likely to stay in place, the better material for trying to sidecast and leave in one place, according to our folks. This is the area where you see the highest concentrations of sand, less than except a couple right down at Craney Island, which one would expect that you would find a lot of sandy material at Craney Island, is majority sand, the best possible material for what it is that VNG wants to try to accomplish with the mechanical dredging.
Does staff have that, Mr. Daniels? That's been entered into the record?
It's in the...
I didn't see it, Mom.
It's in the JPA, I believe.
Is that one in the JPA? Okay. So make sure.
If it's not there, Bruce will check. But if it's not there, we'll submit
that
for your record.
Make sure we've got the record straight.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. But, well, the question is, did we present it to... Well, here, let's... Let's just make sure.
That'll be fine.
I've used it.
Carl, can you get that for me?
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, let me go back. With respect to one individual that I'm going to ask you to hear from is Rick Palmer. Rick Palmer, as I indicated, is with Weeks Marine, and we knew you were going to have two new staff members this morning from Texas A&M, so I'm pleased to report to you his credential is likewise. He's been in the Marine contracting business for 15 of his 18 years as a civil service. What he's going to talk to you about is interesting. There are significant, I'm not going to tell you, and he wouldn't tell you, that directionally drill cannot be used in that area we propose to mechanically dredge or clam trench. What he will tell you is that the risk associated with directionally drilling that are significant. And here's why. When you, this is a layman's perspective, and he can embellish. When you bring this pipe from Craney Island, you use two tugboats, one at each end, and you use that to create a tension on the pipe. And remember, we're pulling 24-inch pipe a number of miles with a half inch cover. If you don't keep that tension exactly right, and if you don't keep adequate tension on that pipe, it'll turn on you, and it'll buckle, and you'll end up with, my term, a noodling effect with respect to the pipe. Now, why is that a problem in the area we propose to mechanically dredge? Because that tug, obviously, is out front of that pipe. If you try to use that tug on the front end, the bow, if you will, of this extended string of pipe, that tug ends up here in this area. If you look closely at that area, you've only got 3 or 4 foot of water. So we have a draft issue. And if I take that tug, or somebody takes that tug in there, the next thing you know, I'm going to be back here for prop dredging.
Or you don't want to do that.
No, I don't. I've been there, done that. Thank you. but it just, and it's not that you can't do it. I'm not saying that. But there is risk associated with it. And consequently, there's also, I mean, that would be taking that tugboat. And even if you thought you might have enough draft, if you didn't, guess what we do? We stir up B1A. So you've got to measure these risks and associate with respect to what's being being proposed. Let me just say a couple of things about time of year restrictions, and Les Flora, the project manager, is going to talk to you more about those. We have an in-service date of, through our SCC order of November 2009, we have to be delivering gas to Southside. Now, you know, will they put us in jail if we don't? I doubt it. But that is the understanding, and that's our commitment, or the company's commitment, to the State Corporation Commission, operating as the arm of the state, to provide the certificates of necessity for the service. The work schedule has us completing work in June 2009. There's some leeway, and it's not that people are delayed or have not been moving with haste to try to get this done. In fact, there is, as you probably noticed, there's pipe being delivered to certain staging stations as we sit here today. That schedule has us completing work in June of 2009. A couple of weather delays, which you know you're going to have. and other circumstances make it a very, very tight schedule. We have, as you will see in the schedule, accommodated what we understood to be and what we have utilized before in working with the commission, a June to September time of year restriction, which was built into the schedule in anticipation of, obviously at this stage, wrong, what we might be looking to when we came to the commission. Mr. Chairman, I didn't mean to drone on. I didn't want to make those few points, and if you can spare us a few more minutes, I would ask Mr. Atkinhead to come talk to you about the fishery biology and the benthics and impacts on clams as a result of side casting. And when these three finish, I'll come back up and wrap it up real quick.
Which three are going to testify?
You all want to stand up?
I'll stand at once.
Rick, you want to stand up? Les?
I see two.
Come on out here so you can swear you.
Do you solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give before the commission will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
State your name.
Bruce Atkinhead. I'm with Malcolm Perney. I've been assisting Virginia Natural Gas in the permitting process here for their pipeline project. I'm going to be brief. John's already kind of briefed you, but I would like to call your attention to the graphic up here on the screen. Notice this lighter area starting on the north here and ending on the south here. That, I believe, represents the natural ebb and flow channel in the Plover James River. The area in the river that has the highest current velocities. That area, the darker area to the north there, as you get into those shallower depths, the current velocity drops off considerably in comparison to what is moving up and down through the natural channel, and that in part is why they dredged the navigation channel in the natural channel, because there's a lot of current movement in there, and it tends to move the sediment through that area more rapidly, and thus they have to deal with issues like dredging on a less frequent basis. Back in 1999, I believe, the Virginia Institute of Marine Science undertook a current study across this area of the lower James River and did some current velocity modeling and turned out a report that we've taken a look at. And I don't know if you all can see this graphic, but I'll pass it around. You'll notice the velocities that VIMS modeled were actually in the sort of center portion of that light area up there. And if you move to the south, you'll notice in the area where the broodstock area is, the velocities drop off in comparison to the higher velocities in the channel. But if you look to the north on that graphic where we're going to be, or we're proposing to be doing the trenching, you'll notice that the velocities are even significantly lower. So, you know, the combination of what we've been able to glean from that VIMS report on current velocities and the fact that within the area that we're going to be trenching from just south of V1A down to approximately V2B, the sediment composition there is upwards of 70, possibly as much as 80% sand, heavier material. We believe the low current velocities, the heavier material, when you side cast that, it's going to stay in place. What effect is that going to have on the natural resources on the shellfish in that area? We've estimated, I think the graphics that were distributed to you a little while ago indicate that the trench itself is going to be about 30 plus feet across at the top, and then there's going to be an additional area to the I believe it's to the west where that material is going to be sidecast, another 70 feet. So approximately an area, including the trench itself and the side cast, of about 100 feet, 50 200 or 5,300 feet long, whatever that the distance is of the trench, we will lose those resources in that area. We concede that, certainly, and we're more than happy to talk to the fisheries folks and your staff and come to a decision on mitigation, but certainly the resources in that area would be lost. With regard to this activity on any fish that happen to be migrating through this area, we've estimated that of that 5,200 or 5,300 foot trench, only about 500 feet of that will be under construction at any one point in time. When you think in terms of the length of the entire project, approximately 4.5 miles from the Newport News side to Craney Island, fish that are migrating through that area certainly have the ability to detect conditions in the water that are unsuitable for them. You know, and with only 500 feet under construction at any one time, we believe that there's suitable routes around this area for those fish to take, and that the impact on those fish would be minimal during this construction period.
Any questions, Mr. Atkinhead? Mr. Fox?
Sir.
If you use the dredging method and therefore remove the material and don't side cast it, isn't that environmentally preferable?
Certainly. It would produce less impact. Yes, sir.
Is it tremendously more expensive?
I would let the folks from Virginia Natural Gas address the cost, and I think they're prepared to do that.
I mean, but why isn't that being advocated as a...
Again, I...
Mr. Daniel?
Virginia Natural Gas.
It's economic. It's not that in and of itself that component might put you in a circumstance where you failed your prudency review at the Corporation Commission, but the when you start adding up, if you get all the extra bells and whistles, then the costs do begin to approach. Very roughly, We've moved in the neighborhood of $8 to $10 million associated with what you have before you versus what was originally brought just on this water crossing. The section all told that we proposed for mechanical dredge would add another. And understand, we don't have... And I'm not being evasive, Mr. Fox. We don't have hard contracts for this at this stage. We have one contract for the entire crossing, and all of these will be change orders with respect to the contractors, which have yet not to be negotiated because we frankly didn't know where we were or where we might end up here. But ballparking it, that section, and I couldn't tell you how much is allocated to the side cast, but that adds another $5 or $6 million to those overall costs.
Can we have the call from Virginia National?
Yeah, he's coming up. He's coming up.
Okay.
I have a question.
Excuse me. Dr. McConaughey?
Yeah, you're saying only 500 feet would be under construction at any one time, but in the materials we got, it said the side cast might be there for 6 to 8 weeks. Does it take that long to go 500 feet?
No, sir. The trench itself is going to be constructed to a length of about 5,200 feet, but only any one point in time will 500 feet of that 5,200 feet be under construction. Once the material is side cast through the entire length of that 52 or 5,300 feet, that material will sit there for about 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay, so the trench will be dug completely, and then you'll be doing 500 feet at a time. Is that correct?
Mr. Grab?
Yeah, point of clarification, and keeping in mind the staff's only had a chance to look at material that Mr. McConaughey said based on the materials they had provided, if I could draw your attention to the time line that was submitted. if I'm correct in looking at the timeline, and then if you would look at, once you've looked at that, look at the last two sentences on the first paragraph on the next page, you'll see that the burying of the pipe and the trench is the last thing that's going to be done, and the narrative says that it will not occur until May 2009 or between June and September. So we're actually talking not 3 to 4 or 6 to 8 weeks, but the material would be overboard 12 to 14 months based on the information they provided.
Well, further questions, Mr. Atkinhead? I do. I have two. Mr. Atkinhead?
Sir.
Two specific questions. That spoil that's overboard that comes out of the trench, as well as the heavy metals that have been discussed. In what likelihood do you believe that that spoil will remain in place, and what do you think the likelihood is that those heavy metals will be distributed in an unsafe and environmentally friendly manner?
I don't believe either of them pose a significant threat.
Why don't you believe that?
We're going to be south of the area of B1A where those arsenic and nickel levels were reported. And two, again, the combination of the sand material and the low current velocities, I believe, will keep that material in place.
Follow-up question, Mr. Fox?
Will you drill down to B1A and found the heavy metals and the arsenic and so forth. Did you do other drilling along the whole? I mean, you indicated you'd done some drilling to find out there was sand along the way.
Yes, sir.
Did you, when you did those drillings, did you find arsenic, other heavy metals, other potentially dangerous elements?
All of this, I believe there were 24 cores, I believe, from Craney Island to Anderson Park. And we tested all 24 cores for the same parameters. And only B1A had levels of arsenic and nickel that rose above that threshold, that the effects range minimum. And as John indicated to you earlier, when we contacted DEQ, to find out what standard they applied when they were evaluating water quality impacts of projects like this. It was the effects range medium, and we were well below that threshold for both arsenic and nickel.
Well, follow up, Mr. Fox.
On the other cores, all of the readings that we got on all the parameters that we tested, I believe, were non-detect.
All right, well, the project has changed here over time, as Mr. Daniel pointed out. And I gather the cores were drilled some time ago when Plan A, I guess, was in effect. Now you're on at least Plan C. Do you still believe that the 24 cores were drilled in spots that will represent stitch points and the trenching area?
Yes, sir. The cores were drilled on the original alignment that was proposed. We are still on that original alignment. All we're doing is changing the mix between directional drill and trench. So we're still on that same alignment.
Mr. Schick?
Now, on that line south, what is the next closest boring hole?
I believe those borings were spaced between 500 feet and 1,000 feet apart.
So 500, you're going to start 500 feet south of B1A.
Right.
And probably another 500 feet at the most was the next boring hole, which
Correct.
Showed no contaminants
Correct.
Involved.
I guess the follow-up question I've got is maybe from an educational perspective is, what do you think caused there to be arsenic in, I think I know the answer, but why would arsenic and nickel be present there and not be present in other locations?
Well, you're asking a non-chemist, a chemical question, but I'll do my best to answer that. This area here, Virginia, and southeastern Virginia in particular, I've learned this from talking to some of the other folks on our staff who know more about this than I do. But arsenic is a naturally occurring element in southeastern Virginia and oftentimes occurs naturally at levels higher than the standards. So it's not surprising that we found arsenic there at, you know, at a level that, you know, that exceeded some threshold. But when you look at that core and its proximity to the shoreline, and, you know, and the activities, the human activities that occur there, I would suspect if I had to point at some source, then I would say that it's coming off of the land through stormwater possibly or some other vector.
Further questions, Mr. Atkinhead? Thank you, sir. Ms. Flora, you next.
Thank you. I'd like to talk just briefly.
State your name for the record, please.
Sorry, Les Flora with Virginia Natural Gas. I'm project manager for this project. I'd like to speak real briefly, if I could, to the schedule of the project. There's been a couple of questions here, and I think maybe that I can put this in perspective and answer some of those. I think it's important to understand that the construction techniques that are going to be used to build this project basically are going to have all the pipe fabrication done onshore on Craney Island. We'll be building this pipe into strings, both the horizontal directional strings as well as the string of pipe that we're proposing to trench in and lay. All of that will be built up on Craney Island and towed into place. As you move through the alignment, we'll actually start the construction by constructing strings and doing the HDD work on Anderson Park as the first HDD. And then this construction schedule is set out to basically allow the drilling rigs to move without any delay right down the line on the construction on the HDD portions, with the trench portion being last. And you can see as this construction schedule lays out, basically what I've showed is the activities that are associated with the individual horizontal directional drill segments. Each one of those activities, and there's five of those drill segments, each one of them contains a small dredging activity associated with digging an entry or an exit pit. Then there's the actual drill time period. It ranges from 60 days up to 90 to 120 days for the longer drills. But basically, that's a drill rig in the water. It's doing the initial pilot hole of the horizontal directional drill and then making a series of pullbacks back and forth to enlarge the hole to 36 inches. It'll accept this 24-inch pipe. And then the last component associated with that would be pulling that section of pipe off of Craney Island out into place, flooding that pipe into the drill hole, and then pulling that back, which is actually a fairly short duration. It was mentioned by Mr. Atkinhead that only about 500 feet of trench would actually be in construction at one time. And what we were referring to is the staging effect of the directional drills. In other words, the initial activity on the first drill at Anderson Park would be to dig an entry pit. And while that drill work is going on at Anderson Park, we've moved that rig down to the next location, which would be the marine drill for the Newport News Channel. And we dig the entry and exit pit for those two sides. And then once the drill work was complete at Craney Island, at Anderson Park, we jump right down to the marine crossing, the channel crossing, and start the drill work. And we've got the next segment of pit work dredging to start at a time that would coincide with being able to start the next horizontal directional drill right after that's done. So in short, what I'd say for that is Mr. Atkinhead was right, that we would only be actively trenching in the water at least from the start period in May through March, when all this directional drilling was completed, only about 500 to 600 feet at a time, representing these pits. Now, we are proposing to sidecast the pit material and have it stay there through the duration of this whole construction, and I'll tell you why in just a second here. But as we get through all of that work and complete our directional drilling work out here in March, then the last piece of the work would be what we're proposing as the opening of this ditch, the clamshell trenching of this ditch, 5,300 feet. That would take place in February and March. What we have been, whether it's an assumption or whether it's information that we've gotten from our scientific resources, is that typical time of year restrictions associated with the benthic community are typically in the June to September time frame. So we have tried to build this schedule such that the most invasive part of the actual trenching work, which is that 5,300 feet of trench, would take place during the winter months. We see that on our schedule out here in the February and March time frame. Now, it would take about 6 to 8 weeks to open that trench. I believe that's the 6 to 8 weeks that you've been hearing about as the level of trenching activity that would be associated with this trench section. Once that's completed and we tow the string of weight-coated pipe in place and get it down, what remains to be done on the project at that point is all five of those tie-in points. Now we've got these directional drill segments laid out across the water and the weight-coated segment of pipe that we're proposing to trench in. And then we'd go in and build the tie-in points, which are basically short 40 to 50 foot prefabricated and pre-fitted sections of pipe with flange connections. We have to actually go down with divers, measure them, fabricate the pipe, put the flanges on, and then have divers down assembling those flanges and tightening those flanges. We assume that's going to take a period of about 5 weeks. And then once that's completed, we have a pipeline that's made up end to end. At that point, we would put a final hydrostatic test on that pipeline. It's at that point in the progress of the project that we can then go back and start burying all those pits. So from the time the first pit is started out here in May until the time the last burying is done, clean up that trench work and other tie-in locations, it would indeed be about 14 months or so that we would have these holes uncovered. So that's basically what we're showing on this schedule is a period between June and August to go back and bury the pipe in the trench. I'm not sure that it's actually going to take that long, but we had that long towards the end of the schedule. So we basically filled that bar graph with that time allotted so that the contractor could schedule his resources in the most economical means during that period to get that done. I believe that's pretty much the essence of the schedule, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on that if I could.
Any questions for Mr. Flora? Mr. Tankard, then Mr. Robbins.
Yes, sir. I have just one quick question, and definitely a lame question. Why not just directionally drill the whole thing? What kind of cost is associated, and what are you saving, I guess?
Well, the additional cost associated with the drills is, as Mr. Daniel pointed out, going to the level of directional drill that we're at right now, which includes about 75% drill, has added about $8 million to the initial cost of the project over our initial proposal. Completing the remainder of this project with the remainder of directional drill, we're estimating it's going to be another $5 million. So we have a delta on that cost from the initial proposal to a complete directional drill solution would be about $13 million.
And excuse me, but this is related to that.
Okay, go ahead.
What percentage of what's the total project cost? And what percent are we talking about? 2% or 20% of the project?
A couple of ways. The entire crossing project initially costed out at $25 million from Newport News to Craney Island. So when we say we added another $8 million for the additional directional drill that we're proposing today, that's $8 million on the initial $25. And if we have to go directional drill the rest of the way, that'll add another $5 million. So it'll be $13 on $25. It'll increase the cost of that segment of the project by about 50%.
And suppose you went with the instead of the mechanical dredging, you went with the hydraulic dredging and replaced it with, clean fill. How much would that add to cost?
If we're just talking about the 5,300-foot section, my best estimate right now, and it's purely an estimate because I've not sat down and talked to the contractor, but with all the numbers I've seen come in, I believe we're looking at about another $2.5 to $3 million associated with just that 5,300-foot section.
Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, my question was to that same point, and I guess the only question that I would ask a little bit differently is what do you have any sense of the cost if you used the mechanical dredging method for the stitch points and the 5,300 feet as you proposed, but instead of side cast, simply replace the clean fill?
Well, again, I think the replacement of the clean fill is the bulk of that additional cost, and the numbers that I'm using to come up with these estimates are about $75 per cubic yard when we look at the cost of getting the fill and the cost of transporting it in and the cost of actually getting into the ditch.
And to follow up, do those costs in any way render the project not economically viable. I mean, we understand, I think council has clearly communicated the need for the project, the benefits publicly of the project, et cetera. But when we get into the economics of this project, does adding a couple of million dollars of cost in terms of fill to require that it be more environmentally compatible with the resources in that area to try to mitigate impacts in that area, does that render the project unviable in some way?
Well, let me answer in a couple of ways, I guess. All of this ultimately affects our ratepayer. So at the end of the day, all the costs that we incur on this project is going to have to go through some prudency exam from the State Corporation Commission. There are other customers on this project, other Virginia Energy users. Dominion Virginia Power is a customer on this project, as well as Columbia Gas of Virginia down on the Portsmouth end. Right now, we are pretty much at the upper end of the project level or the project expense that we had talked about with them when we first looked at how we were going to share costs on this project, because their ratepayers are going to be burdened in a prorated portion similar to ours. To the point where our project costs start exceeding their ability to participate in that, all of that additional cost comes back to the Virginia natural gas ratepayers again and creates more burden to them. So I can't honestly tell you that no, the project would absolutely be canceled if this was imposed on us. I can tell you it's a significant burden to the ratepayers, and that's, again, what we're trying to do is manage our fiduciary responsibility to our ratepayers with the environmental concerns.
Mr. Fox,
thank you.
You indicated that it's $2.5 to $3 million for the difference in hydraulic versus mechanical dredging, and I think Mr. Daniel said you've got 250,000 people that would benefit from this. It appears to me that additional amount is $10 a person, which doesn't seem to me to be excessively high amount.
Well, honestly, I mean, in my view, I just don't think you can break this portion of it out and look at it by itself. Again, I think, you know, the message I'd like to communicate is that we, after much deliberation and much consideration with VIMS and VMRC about where we thought the real environmental benefit from this project was coming, we're agreeing that we're going to spend $8 million that's going to be to our ratepayers' account in order to take care of these environmentally sensitive areas. I guess the real question I have, speaking for myself anyway, is the additional cost, whether it's $2.5 or $3 million for hydraulically dredging or $5 million for directionally drilling, are there significant environmental benefits, as there were down here, that allowed us to arrive at a decision to spend additional dollars? Do we derive that same kind of benefit on this end of the project? And I'm not sure that we do, but somebody else may have better.
Dr. McConaughey.
Yeah, now that we realize it's going to be, this material is going to be sidecast from May of this year to September of 2009, would anybody in your group care to address will the sediment stay there under a nor'easter or a tropical storm?
I don't know if anybody else would like to address that.
Let me try to help.
Okay.
I don't know what may or may not happen in a nor'easter or storm, but what I do want you all to understand is that in the event that the sidecast material does not stay in place, there is an obligation under the contract with the marine contractor that and we would do a pre-bathymetric survey to determine that, and post-survey, there is an obligation on the part of the contractor to replace that any displaced material, which we don't think will be significant, with clean, commercially available material. So I thought that would bear bore on the discussion that you were having.
Further questions?
Yes, I have one question.
Mr. McCluskey.
The hydraulic method, where are you disposing of the material that you hydraulically move?
Mr. McCluskey, it's to be sidecast. We dig it, put it beside the trench on the bottom, come back and cover the pipe once the pipe's been laid in the trench that was dredged.
I was thinking that hydraulic dredging would be like you dredge a channel and the material would be deposited, say, in Craney Island or somewhere like that. Is that not what you're referring to as hydraulic?
Well, we're not proposing hydraulic. That's if I did, I misspoke. I meant mechanical. I mean, in that case, a lot of circumstances, as we've both seen in front of this commission, there is the responsibility to remove the material, and you take it to Craney Island, and then you bring back clean material. What we're asking specifically is to be able to mechanically dredge, sidecast the material, and use it to refill the trench. Nobody wants this trench refilled appropriately and expertly more than Virginia Natural Gas. I mean, that's a huge liability if it doesn't happen in that fashion. And if there's anything that's certain about all of this, is that pipe is going to get buried to a point where it's safe both for the gas company and for other users of the area.
One more.
Rick Palmer, real quickly on the issue of tugboats and risk.
Palmer, good morning.
My name is Richard Palmer. I'm the Mid-Atlantic Area Manager for Weeks Marine, based in Portsmouth, Virginia. Weeks Marine is a corporation that headquarters in New Jersey. We are probably the largest specialty marine contractor in the United States. We are the second largest dredging contractor in the United States. And I've been working with Les since January of 2007, discussing this project and working with them to achieve a viable solution. I've been asked to comment on the viability of using a directional drill north of the Newport News Channel. And as John Daniels had indicated previously, there are significant concerns that we have. As Les had commented, our intent is to fabricate pipe strings approximately 3,000 to 4,000 feet long that we will fabricate on land on Craney Island. We're going to pull them off of Craney Island and float them across the harbor and sink them in place in the alignment that's correct so that they then can be pulled back through the horizontal directionally drilled holes. When we get up to the north side of the channel, the option to replace the pulled portion with two directional drills, basically extending the Anderson Park drill,
extending this portion of the drill another 1,000 feet, and then adding 3,500 or 4,000 foot drill here. The Anderson Park drill would not be a problem. We're going to pull it off the west side of Craney, pull it with two tugboats as previously described, bring it over into alignment, and then drop it right about here. And then the drill, as it comes out, will hook onto the end of the pipe and pull it back. For the second portion of that drill, we cannot bring the pipe over and drop it through the channel. Dropping it across the channel is obviously going to impede navigation. We don't want to have the pipe drop across the bottom of the channel. So we have to get the pipe up to the north side of the hole. And that is where John's already said we have difficulty because it's so shallow in the first 1,500 feet off of the shoreline in Newport News. Our intent is always to pull this with two tugboats and multiple other boats to keep the pipe straight. It's a 24-inch diameter pipeline, half-inch wall, with pulling pieces that are 4,000 feet long. It's like just a little piece of spaghetti, a wet piece of spaghetti. And it's difficult to control. We have to keep it under tension. As we come over here to the north side, if we have to get the end of the pipe up into the shallows, we have to go up there in advance, set up some barges with winches and anchors, and actually make a transfer operation where we come over with a tugboat, bring the pipe in adjacent to a barge, put a winch line on the end of the pipe, take off the tugboat, get the tension back on the wire, and hopefully never lose the tension on the pipe the whole time we're doing this, and then winch it up into the shallows and flood it and sink it and allow it to be pulled in the hole. That little step of doing this transfer from the tugboat to the winch gets the whole thing very, very shaky. It's a high-risk operation.
Further questions?
Question.
Mr. Tankard?
This impressive operation. It looks like a foot race with batons almost, you know. And the last leg, though, as I'm understanding it from your testimony and Mr. Daniel's testimony, is that you're going to have the tugboat pretty close to shore, and you're going to have prop wash. But what you're also saying is that you're going to have boats, or barges, they're going to be sort of in this baton, handing off, I'll call it. Can't they just come out a little further instead of having to have the tugboat so close to shore?
Well, that's why in that one particular instance we have to have the barges. Our right. standard operation would be is that pipe remains under tension with two tugboats. We get it in the correct position. We flood the line, and while it's still attached to the tugboats, we let the line drop to the bottom. When we get up to that northern portion, that's where we can't take the tugboat because of the shallow water, because of the prop wash issues, because we're going to ground the boat. We have to take that boat off of the line and transfer it to a winched line and be able to pull it up to the north.
Okay.
Mr. Fox, Mr. Schick.
Following Mr. Tankard's discussion there, you've got 5,000 feet here that's proposed to be dredged currently, and you've explained why it would be very difficult to directionally drill that section. Suppose you cut that in half or took some smaller segment. Could a portion of that 5,000 feet or whatever it is that's proposed to be dredged be hydraulically drilled? Not all of it, but part of it. Which part would be the easiest to drill?
At some point, I don't want to say that the shorter we make the weight-coated portion of the pipe, the pulled portion of the pipe, the less feasible it all becomes, because initially we had about 12,000 feet of pipe that was weight-coated. We've now reduced that to 5,200 feet. The price per foot of that 5,200 feet continually goes up as you shorten it. But overall, our directional driller can probably drill 4,000 feet off of Anderson Park. Right now we have a drilled hole that's 3,000 feet in length. He can potentially drill 1,000 feet more without an undue issue. And so potentially we could reduce that 5,200 feet to approximately 4,200 feet by lengthening the Anderson Park drill. If we were to try to lengthen the water-to-water portion that's under the Newport News Channel, we run into other issues where our anchorage of our barges, we have to be able to withstand the pulling force. And the pulling force is about, on a 4,000-foot drill, is about 600,000 pounds. We have to be able to anchor our barge and withstand 600,000 pounds of force as they're pulling that pipe back through the hole. And that becomes quite difficult.
Okay. Sure.
That was my question about coming from the north side of the land.
Brilliant minds think alike. Further questions? Thank you, sir. Is there anyone in the audience here to speak in support of this project? Anyone here against this project?
Yes,
Mr. Chair. Yes, sir. Come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Do you solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
State your name for the record, please, sir.
My name is Ellis W. James. I reside at 2021 Ken Lake Place in the city of Norfolk, where I'm a lifelong resident. I've listened very carefully this morning, and I think I ought to express a couple of concerns that I'm sure each one of you are at least at this point aware of. The dates and deadlines, as important as they are to a business, should not be the driving force in this situation. I was disappointed, with all due respect to my good friend Mr. Daniel, that the materials that were submitted to you come at a time that they are also concerned about trying to meet those deadlines. I hope that the staff will be given a thorough opportunity to review these materials before any vote is taken on the project. Now, I'd like to express concerns in the areas of the contaminants and the displacement. All of that has been gone over very thoroughly, so I don't need to go through it step by step. But the question of the displacements and the contaminants is extremely important in view of the manner in which this is being proposed. I, too, reacted in a, I think, common sense fashion that the directional drilling would be the best for the entire project. I'm not unmindful of the complications that have just been presented to you. However, I think that is something that we need to take a serious look at. The other thing that I'm very concerned about is that quite frequently in the review this morning, Craney Island has been mentioned. We have a major superport coming to Craney Island. And my question is, since it has not been addressed yet, how is this pipeline going to be protected from a major project of that nature that is coming online very soon? I hope that that will also be an area that the staff will address. I know today is a day where you need to identify where you went to school. I'm a proud student at UNC in 59, and with all due respect to Texas A&M, the Tar Heels are still in, and they are on the verge.
I'm not going to rule on relevancy, but you can continue on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. James. Have a good day. Mr. Daniel, you have several minutes to wrap up, if you would, please.
Just real quickly, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. First, thank you for your time and attention. Obviously, your questions indicate that you are cognizant of the project and trying to find the appropriate way to get to the endpoints here. I do think that the applicant has done everything they can possibly do to try to accommodate what we believe to be the legitimate stewardship concerns with respect to the project. And I think real quick, in closing, I would only go to the 28.2-1205, which guides us all in these things, and tell you that I believe the public and private benefits of the project have been demonstrated. I believe that the applicant has made accommodation for other reasonable and permissible uses of state waters. I think while there may be some mortality of a limited number of clams for which mitigation will be required, we have been mindful of the fisheries, if in no other way, by the significant efforts to continue to protect with you the marine sanctuary and the broodstock area. And I believe certainly that adjacent and other properties are protected as you evaluate the information before you. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will close and ask that I hope it will be your pleasure to issue a permit to Virginia Natural Gas consistent with the proposal that's now before you. And I thank you very again for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Daniel. Any further questions, Mr. Daniel?
One quick thing.
Mr. Schick?
There was a question about easement for and royalties. I didn't know if the applicant was asking at this time for to have that as part of this.
I don't think we're not right for that right now. That was a matter of information. You can comment, Mr.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's right. We haven't provided those to Mr. Josephson and others. We will be doing that depending upon your actions here today. But with regard to the all the issues on page 3 of the staff report. There's really no controversy or consternation on our part with those matters that have been presented to you by Elizabeth.
Thank you, Mr. Daniel. Matters before the commission for discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Fox.
I've listened to the testimony both by staff and by the applicants. I think I now understand the public benefits of the proposed project. I understand the private benefits of the proposed project. And I have an understanding of the possible environmental concerns of the project. I guess I am comfortable with the project as proposed and based on staff's recommendations for the area of the pipeline other than the 5,200 feet in question where they propose to mechanically dredge. So I have no questions about those other parts. Where they mechanically dredge, I guess, where they propose to mechanically dredge, I guess I would be inclined to let Virginia Natural Gas have the option of directional drilling wherever they can in that 5,200 feet, if that's their option, or otherwise to hydraulically dredge and take the waste material that comes off, not side cast it, but to remove the waste material, and then if they choose, they could test that removed material, and if it tests okay, put it back or use new fill. I guess that's kind of where I'm leaning after hearing what's happened. But I'm interested in further discussion before a motion.
Okay. Did y'all get that? Understand? Further discussion? I'll take it as we get in the line now. Dr. McConaughey, then Mr. Schick.
Yeah, I share Mr. Fox's concerns. Looking at their cross-sectional of the trench with the side casting, it looks like you almost triple the impact to the benthic community when you side cast, and that is assuming it stays in place. If you hydraulically dredge that, you can cut down the impact on the bottom greatly. So I would support the hydraulic dredging part of that part of the channel.
I'm sorry, Mr. Schick, and Mr. Robbins.
As far as the drilling the holes for the directional drilling, I don't have a problem with the side cast at that point in time. There are definitely increased problems with side casting from such a large trench, and I think that either recovering the material that comes out, which would lower their cost, extending the drilling by that 1,000 feet that they were talking about, would reduce the cost, and I think we would get a huge benefit from the environmental side. As far as the risks in the involved in the process that they were talking about on the North Shore, I've been involved with dredging operations and have watched this type of operation occur in it. The possibility for problems greatly increase with every 6 inches of water that you lose. So I can attest that they are correct in that it is a higher risk in trying to pull that pipe in a low draft area.
Okay. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the applicant has made a clear and compelling case with respect to the public benefits and need for the project. Certainly, as you indicated at the outset, it's part of the comprehensive energy plan. And yet staff has raised and VIMS has raised through their analysis, I think, some legitimate concerns about particularly the impacts to water quality and impacts to the benthic community, things that we are required to consider under code. And I think it's our job to balance those things out and give them all due consideration. I think the applicant has gone a long way
towards addressing the concerns that have been raised with respect to the benthic impacts. They're now directionally drilling 75% of the project. That's a major step forward to address the concerns, I think, that have been raised. And yet some of the lingering concerns are legitimate and substantial. As Dr. McConaughey said, if you consider the profile, the cross-section of the diagram of trenching and side casting that are given to us today as figure one in the supplemental packet, the impacts are roughly threefold what they would be if clean fill were required. So my inclination would be that to acknowledge what the applicant has done. They've come a long way in terms of increasing the amount of the project that's directionally drilled, and yet they've requested that they be able to mechanically dredge the stitch points and mechanically dredge the 5,300-foot trench. I think that mechanical dredging would be appropriate, provided that we require that those spoils be replaced with clean fill. That would be my inclination on those areas that are still in dispute.
So as long as I make sure I understand, you're advocating or suggesting that the 5,300 feet could be excavated as long as the material were removed and clean fill placed behind it, or?
Yes, sir, as well as the stitch points.
As well as the stitch points. Okay.
And yep. Just to follow up, I think the applicant has also made a case that the time of year restrictions advocated by staff might jeopardize the viability of the project, their ability to meet their deliverable schedule. And I think if we require clean fill to be placed in those areas, that would also address staff's concerns. So I think provided that we put in clean fill, we would also waive the time of year restriction.
Further comment? Well, I have been part and parcel to the discussions that have been held. We've had numerous discussions, staff, representatives of VIMS, Virginia Natural Gas, and their very capable and knowledgeable assistants. And I would be remiss if I didn't say how much they have tried to accommodate our concerns from the outset, particularly around the area of the broodstock area. I think it's been a good work in progress where we both have openly shared our concerns, which brings us to these conclusions today. So I just wanted to make sure that everyone understood how much work has gone into getting us here today by all involved. Mr. Daniel? It's a little out of order, but you've heard some of the comments that have been made by the commission. Would you care to comment before I put it to the commission for a vote? I know this is a lot of order.
I recognize that as an opportunity, Mr. Chairman. I'm hesitating because somebody just whispered in my ear that if we were required to remove the material and replace with purchased commercially available material, a rough calculation is that some $275,000 cubic yards at $75 a yard, which is a big number, $20 million. So that's what that would be doing to the project.
Okay. Thank you. Matters before the commission for action.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes, sir.
How about recapturing the material above the surface and then reusing the material? If it's 80% sand material.
Yeah. Using barge, holding the material and putting it back.
Right.
Yeah. Can I caucus for one second?
Yes.
That would also mitigate your concerns with time of year restrictions, I would presume, as well, by capturing it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Sorry to... there's simply... I think the bottom line is, logistically, Mr. Schick, the number of barges just wouldn't be available physically in order to accommodate those quantities of material. Mr. Palmer has indicated they just don't have that kind of a barge resource, so it's simply not a practical result from his perspective.
Now, could it be stored on Craney Island and then brought back out?
Well, I think I can handle that one without caucus. One, I'm not sure of the feasibility of doing that, but I do know that we've been through a number of machinations with the folks at the Corps on the use of Craney Island. Craney Island actually becomes, as you know, you all have approved a portion of this project that runs from Craney Island under the Elizabeth River to the city of Norfolk a couple of months ago. Craney Island becomes a mobilization station, if you will, for the pulling of the pipe, and I'm not sure logistically, and I'll look to Rick whether or not that would be a option or not. Just putting the material on Craney Island as opposed to floating barges.
Just come to the podium, please, sir.
Come up.
I don't want to speak too much on how the dredge material is handled on Craney Island. However, there's two methods typically the dredge material is brought onto Craney. One is where it's pumped directly from a hydraulic dredge. They lay a pipe and they pull it right over and put it over the top of the dike, and they pump it out into one of their bermed areas and let that material decant and dewater and dry out. And typically what they have found is that material takes quite a long time to become stable. They do have on the eastern side sand piles that potentially could be mined and good material taken out, but the thought of being able actually to take this material out of a pit, put it up on Craney, and then be able to go back and reclaim the same material, I don't believe is a feasible option. The other way, if you mechanically dredge it, place it into a dump scow, which is often the case here, you can take that dump scow, bring it over to what they call the rehandling basin, which is on the southeastern side of Craney. That material is then dumped into the rehandling basin, and as that basin fills up, then at some time a dredger comes in and they actually dredge out that rehandling basin and pump the material over the dike. In that case as well, that material would not be available readily to be reclaimed to use for this project.
But there might be enough material there on Craney Island that's already stockpiled to be able to use that material.
I truly can't comment on whether or not that's even a feasible solution. Obviously, that material has become part of the dredge material management area, and I don't know what happens once it becomes a part of the government there. I don't know what happens to it.
Thank you. Mr. Pollan?
This is a very complicated and complex issue. I have to weigh the public benefit with the environmental benefit. I think staff, I think VIMS, I think our applicant, Virginia Natural Gas, has come a long way. They've given a lot, and at some point in time, we have to compromise. And I think today, compromise is in order. And I would move that we allow the permit for Virginia Natural Gas, as permitted, to go forward.
That's a formal motion.
And basically what you're saying is what, as proposed, by Virginia Natural Gas.
Yes.
I'll second
it. Second by Mr. McCluskey. Further discussion. Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I had a follow-up question for counsel for Mr. Daniel.
If Mr. I could, Daniel?
Sir, if I could get you to clarify on the economic issue. Now, when I asked your project manager what would be the cost differential associated with clean fill, he indicated it would be on the order of $2 to $2.5 million, I believe. And you've indicated now that it would be on the order of perhaps $20 million. Is that difference attributable to the fill on the stitch points?
Yes. If I could answer that.
Go ahead.
The two to $2.5 million or so we were talking about was relative only to the mechanical dredge, 5,300 mechanical dredge. And that's about, by our calculation, that's about 29,000 cubic yards. Basically, we're talking about a 4-foot deep trench. At stitch points, the difference that makes up the total of the 277,000 yards comes from all of these stitch points, and that's primarily because of the depth that we have to get down to allow that pipe up out of the directional drill and break it over.
Mm-hmm.
So we could excuse new material.
I'm sorry, Mr. Tanker.
I might have one more question along the same lines. Now, you mentioned again that the directional drilling on that 5,300 feet would be $5 million. So that can be done as well?
It could be directionally drilled, about 5,300 feet. Well, as we've discussed, could it be done? Yes. I think what Mr. Palmer testified to was that there was substantial risk associated with that because you ended up in the first 1,500 feet offshore is terribly shallow. You had draft issues, and consequently you had sort of a domino effect on the pipe string, and you could have significant sort of navigational or other issues in the channel. So could it be done? Yes. Or is there risk? It goes up.
Further questions? There's a motion on the table to allow Virginia Natural Gas to permit as proposed. Motion made by Mr. Holland, second by Mr. McCluskey. Further discussion on that motion. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Based on the testimony we've heard from the applicants, it appears to me that the economic considerations associated with the clean fill requirement would not be consistent with the public interest. That is, if we increase the project cost by $20 million, as they've indicated, we haven't heard any evidence contrary to that cost estimate. So if it's going to increase the cost by that much, as we weigh out these things under the code, I don't think the public interest is served by requiring the clean fill replacement.
But to that point,
Mr. Fox,
to that point, I think the last gentleman indicated that the major cost of replacing that dredge material versus the side cast method is in the stitch points, that the 5,200 feet is a much smaller cost because it's basically a 4-foot trench. So I guess we could allow side casting at the stitch points and not on the 5,200 feet.
Motion on the table to allow Virginia Natural Gas the permit as authorized. First, motion made by Mr. Holland, second by Mr. McCluskey. Any further discussion as to that? Okay.
I would like to amend that motion, if it's acceptable, to concerning the 5,200 feet, require that either be hydraulically dredged and refilled or directionally drilled as at the discretion of the applicant.
Mr. Holland, do you accept that amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I can't accept the amendment, and the reason I don't want to accept the amendment is I feel like that Virginia Natural Gas has given a lot. We've added $8 million to the cost originally that they wanted to do, and they have directionally drilled, and I would like for my motion to stay as it is.
Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Call the roll. Mr. Bowden is absent. Mr. Fox?
No.
Mr. Holland?
Aye.
Dr. McConaughey?
No.
Mr. McCluskey?
Aye.
Mr. Robbins?
Aye.
Mr. Schick?
Aye.
Mr. Tankard?
No.
Chair votes yes. Motion passes from 5-3. Thank you very much for your discussion.
Thank you for your time and considerations. Thank you.
We will now break for lunch. And as I indicated earlier on, take up items 15 or 16, then the remainder of the agenda.